the energy fee one, the carbon.
Okay, let's go ahead and resume. The time is now 11:22 a.m. We'll go on to the second agenda item, and I'm hoping actually we'll be able to complete the next several agenda items and all of our morning agenda pretty quickly. They're all severance tax measures, I think, and we're pretty familiar with them, so hopefully we'll pick up the pace a bit. So the next agenda item is 2007-2008, number 78.
Severance taxes.
And perhaps if we could first hear from proponents. To Mr. Ramey, if you'd like to.
Edward Ramey representing the proponents, James Udall and Tony Lewis. Mr. Lewis was here, but I think he
passed
out. Worn down by global warming or whatever was going on. This is another severance tax issue. I know the board's very familiar with the general format of these things. And perhaps the best thing that I could do is to be quiet and just ask if the board has any questions that we could respond to.
Are there any questions from the board? Ms. Eubanks?
Do you see this as a modification of the existing severance tax on oil and gas, or sort of more of a replacement of the existing tax?
I think you could describe it as either way. It's probably more the former. What it's doing is, as of January 1 of 2009, in new Section 1C, 1B, 1A is historical, 1B we are terminating as a revenue stream. I think it could really be described either way. 1C, I hesitate to call it a new tax. I mean, I don't think it is. I think it's a revision of the severance tax on oil and gas, making those modifications effective as of that particular date. The effect is an old tax goes, the old tax structure goes away, and the new tax place effective on that date. Bearing in mind, of course, also there's some overlap there. Effective date has to do with assessment, so some of the older taxes prior to the January 1 date will continue to be collected, presumably after January 1, 2009.
Okay.
I don't know if I answered your question, Ms. Eubanks. I'm not sure it's a good answer to that question.
Okay. I just was wondering sort of your view of what you thought the measure did.
I think there is a severance tax on oil and gas in the state, and over it's gone through various iterations and modifications over the years. This would be another one.
Thank you.
Any other questions? If not, then let's move on to consideration of whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement. I don't believe I have anybody else signed up to testify on the measure. So I'll turn to board discussion on single subject or entertain a motion. Ms. Eubanks?
Although this measure is before us with different proponents, it's very similar to some of the measures we've dealt with recently dealing with severance tax in a variety of forms. But in terms of the basic underlying issue of single subject, I think, just as we found with those earlier measures, that this measure constitutes a single subject and we should proceed to set a title. I would so move.
And I will second that. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then, Mr. Ramey, have you had a chance to look at the staff draft, and do you have any comments?
We have your – not ready to call you Your Honor. I spent too much time in another
Thank
forum,
you.
It's totally appropriate, nevertheless. We would only have one suggestion with regard to the staff draft. Otherwise, it's fine. And that would be in line 7. Credit against the tax. Credit against the tax based on property taxes. Coming from 6 over. After the word pay, insert the word by producers. Might make it a little clearer that the tax. That the tax that the credit was based on, property taxes paid by producers, not the property taxes you and I paid. Otherwise, the title's fine, and we've also looked at the fiscal number estimate that came down from OSPB, 206.9 million, and that seems as good a figure as we can got. We don't have a better figure than that one, I'll say.
Okay. And again, is there anybody else who wishes to comment on the staff drafts? Discussion by the board? Ms. Eubanks?
Well, just to explain my earlier question to Mr. Ramey, the reason I was asking about whether to describe this as a modification of the existing tax versus sort of replacing the existing tax with a new tax was I thought it might be possible to eliminate some of the phrases in the title about the exemption for stripper wells, the prop ad valorem tax credit, those types of phrases. But based on Mr. Ramey's response, I think I'm inclined at this point to leave the approach as currently set forth in the staff draft. In addition to Mr. Ramey's suggestion, I've got just a couple of small suggestions, and I don't know whether you want those or you want to go ahead and act on Mr. Ramey's suggestion. I would move his suggestion that on line 7, after paid, to insert by producers.
I'll second that. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0.
The next change I would propose is there again, right where the cursor is, beginning in 2009, comma, to strike that language and the comma. That's consistent with similar titles that we've set that we just don't need to have the year in there. So I would move that change.
I'll second that. Any other discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Could I ask you, though, where are you
going
next?
No, go ahead.
If you'd want to, in line 3, do the same thing, strike the phrase for taxable years commencing on or after January 1, 2009.
I think that to have the time frame is important for the change in the taxes. I think it's sort of by implication as
okay.
to when the exemption. I don't know that the date. Mm-hmm. I mean, it definitely the exemption from Tabor and other spending limits is tied to the change in the tax law. But I do think the date up front, and
okay.
I think we've done that in the other, that we do have the change on for the tax law.
Okay.
The next change I would propose is in terms of the very last phrase. Where it has the laundry list of purposes, the last purpose under paren 4, the Higher Education Capital Construction Trust Fund, whether or not we should add, while the measure does create it, whether we should add some additional language to specify the purposes. It may be sort of self-evident by the name of the cash fund, but I think on the other similar measures on the title, we did include more specifics when they were creating a new fund, what the fund was to be used for. And so I would throw that issue out for your consideration, that we could just add some language to be used to fund capital construction projects of state institutions of higher education or state colleges and universities.
Go ahead. I had a similar concern that it does seem to me that
that this a major goal of this is to create the Higher Education Capital Construction Trust Fund and put a bunch of money into it. And here, that's literally the last thing being mentioned in the title in a part of a laundry list. One way to address that and some of the funny grammar there at the end would be to delete the which the measure creates and then just add a clause earlier, sort of following the structure of the measure, that says creating the Higher Education Capital Construction Trust Fund, to which will, and then a quick explanation of what it's for, and then just leave the laundry list as is because you've already said it creates it. And that would sort of bring that a little bit, highlight that a little bit more than this.
Sounds like a good idea to me.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
So, yeah, delete that, and then I don't know where we want to stick the other part. Maybe before the specified percentages.
Okay.
Would say something like creating the Higher Education Capital Construction Trust Fund. Now, did you have language, Ms. Eubanks, about how to say what
Whether
it's for?
Yeah, to be used to fund capital construction projects of state universities and colleges. That may describe it better than state institutions of higher education. To fund capital construction projects of state.
Right, because our junior colleges community colleges.
Community colleges are part of the state system. Junior colleges may actually be independent and funded with ad valorem taxes generally rather than state revenues. And I'm looking at the definition. And I believe by referencing the definition of state institutions of higher education in Section 2318.102, I don't think that would include the junior colleges. And maybe Mr. Ramey could clarify.
Mr. Ramey, question about... Oh, sorry. I thought you were just gossiping or something.
The intent, I think, by referencing the section in the measure that's referenced, junior colleges,
are included.
So don't want to exclude them.
So does everyone think it would be accurate to say what Ms. Eubanks said, which is at state colleges and universities? Or should we just leave it at institutions of higher education?
I tend to leave it at institutions.
Because at least it's a defined term.
Any more than you do, Ms. Eubanks. But I'm afraid it's going to suggest an exclusion.
Okay. Well, that's fine. To fund capital construction projects at state institutions of higher education.
And I think we have, while Sessie's typing that, I'm going to wait until I see how this reads. I'm a little concerned of how the sentence is ultimately going to read, since what we've done is deposited money, dedicated money to various uses, and all of a sudden we have this fund being created as one of the dedications. Let's see how it reads first. If it reads well and flows well, we'll be happy.
Semicolon there, right where you are.
And I think you put a semicolon after education there. She says, yeah.
There's something sort of gnawing on me that the phrase that was just added probably belongs better at the end of the laundry list instead of at the beginning. Now that I'm seeing how it flows, because the gist of this initiative is to dedicate these enhanced funds to a variety of purposes, and the creation of this new fund is simply an implementation of one of those purposes as a way to do it. But the purposes are key. The creation of this fund isn't something independent of and prior to the dedication of the purposes. And I think this language works. I was concerned for a moment, but it appears to be flowing. It just seems that if that could flop down to the end where the omitted language, which the measure creates, was, in some way it might read a little better. That would be my only suggestion. I'm told, I wasn't here, that that's consistent with what the board did with some other initiatives.
I think it's consistent with the way I started it out, the way that we've set the titles on the others was when you had the reference to a new fund, then we just said, which the measure creates to do whatever. I think that was this approach we took on those others, whether you want a separate phrase or not.
I like it better this way. I think the creation of a new trust fund is an important aspect, even if it's not more important or less important than the specified percentages. But I also think it a little bit better this way. But I don't really have a problem putting it at the end either.
Well, unless I'm misunderstanding the measure, I prefer it this way. It seems like that is an important part of this. It's the new purpose, as I recall. I think the others are existing purposes. It's the first purpose listed by the measure. It's the highest percentage, 27%. And it does read better. But I mean, I don't want to distort. If Mr. Ramey is suggesting that it might kind of distort the measure, I think the purpose in my mind is primarily to better reflect the major features of the measure.
Yeah, and I agree. We did it the other way in the other measures, and we probably had it this way and decided, oh, it's much better doing it the other way. But today I feel like this is better. So we may, I don't know. I'm okay either way, but I do have a slight preference for this.
is that your motion, Mr. Domenico?
Oh,
your
yeah.
Slight preference?
I'll move that we do this.
I'll second it. I'll give it a slight second.
Yeah.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
And the last change I would have is to insert the amount on the from the fiscal estimate, and I believe it's $206.9 million. So it would be $.9.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. If there's no other suggested changes to the titles, is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended?
So move.
Second?
Second.
Mr. Eubanks seconds that. For the record, I guess I'll read it. State taxes, the motion would is that the title would read, state taxes shall be increased by $206.9 million annually by an amendment to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning the severance tax on oil and gas extracted in the state, in connection therewith, for taxable years commencing on or after January 1, 2009, and it's January 1, 2009, modifying the existing severance tax on oil and gas extracted in the state by reducing the rate of the tax, comma, exempting gross income below a specified dollar amount from the tax, comma, and eliminating both an exemption for wells with minimal production and a credit against the tax based on property taxes paid by producers, semicolon. Exempting revenues from the tax and related investment income from state and local government spending limits, semicolon. Creating the Higher Education Capital Construction Trust Fund to be used to fund capital construction projects at state institutions of higher education, semicolon. And requiring specified percentages of the tax revenues to be credited to, paren 1, the state severance tax trust fund, comma, paren 2, the local government severance tax fund, comma, paren 3, the capital construction trust fund, comma, and paren 4, the higher education capital construction trust fund, period, with the same changes made in the ballot title and submission clause that follows. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That completes action on number 78. The time is 11:43 a.m. Let's move on to the next agenda item, which is 2007-2008, number 68. This measure was laid over from the previous meeting. The board amended the staff drafts and then laid it over for clarification of the estimate from the Office of State Planning and Budgeting, which has issued a new and revised fiscal analysis dated March 31st, 2008. And Ms. Veach, if you would introduce yourself for the records and if you have any comments about the about where we are.
Tara Veach, for the proponents. Yeah, I think all we need to do is insert the fiscal note from the Office of State Planning and Budgeting.
So, the motion then I think would be in line one where the blank appears to insert $260.8 million. Also in the ballot title and submission clause down below. I'll move that change.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Is there a motion to adopt the staff draft then as amended?
Should we revisit our
oh.
way we've got this laid out in light of what we just did?
Yes, thank you.
I can't remember if we actually did everything else. I guess we did, didn't we? In the title, we went through it all. But Mr. Remy was right that our 78 is inconsistent with this in terms of laying out where the new fund is being created. And you know, this one, the new fund is the Land Conservation Fund, which gets what, 20%. Sort of seems to me that we should do it the way we did 78, for the same reasons. For the same reasons, I don't feel particularly strong about it. I also, consistency is relevant, but not all that dispositive to me. So
we're fine with that change.
Okay, so then I guess the change I would move is to cut the language that the measure creates, starting on line 9, through water resources on line 10. Move it to before the laundry list, before and requiring on line 6. Paste it there. And then delete that the measure creates, and inserting, creating the land conservation fund. I don't know if it should be an creating a or creating the. I think in the probably other one we did the. Probably better. Still okay with that?
Yes, and I would just suggest that, consistent with the last initiative, that on line 5 we add tax based on property taxes paid by producers as well.
All right, I'll move that we make both of those changes. So on line 5 would add by producers.
I'll second that.
On
Sue Banks.
On line 8, I think we need a semicolon after or before, yeah, resources. Just if you could, that's included in your motion.
Yes, I include that in my motion.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. I didn't mean to cut off, actually, Heidi Shore, Doug Rebotham. But does anybody else want to comment on the drafts as amended? Okay. Is there a motion to adopt, then, the staff drafts as amended?
I so move.
Second.
That's been moved and seconded with the understanding that the same changes would be made in the ballot title and submission clause. Just wanted to make sure we do say that would be shall state taxes be increased.
I deleted it. So
oh, okay. Okay. I'm sorry. We do have the motion pending. I lost it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm going to read it into the record, if that pleases everybody. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That concludes action on number 68. The time is 11:49 a.m. Then let's move on to the next agenda item. As I indicated earlier, agenda item number 4 will eliminate because number 69 was withdrawn by the proponent. So moving on then to agenda item number 5, that is 2007-2008, number 71, severance taxes. Severance tax, this is a rehearing on motion submitted by Mr. Gessler on behalf of Howard Stanley Dempsey. So perhaps, Mr. Gessler, if we could hear from you on your motion. Thank you.
Certainly, Tom. Thank you very much. My name again is Scott Gessler. I represent Mr. Howard Stanley Dempsey, Jr. in this matter. And this is the motion for rehearing on proposed ballot initiative number 71. As an initial matter, I'd like to withdraw a portion of our request for the motion for rehearing, and that's item number 1 with respect to the misleading, inaccurate, and incomplete title, specifically the amount involving the size of the tax. So we are withdrawing that objection.
Okay, thank you.
So I will just sort of go through the motion in sequence. As we've identified here, we think that this has 4 separate subjects. And I'd like to address, obviously, subject number 1, an increase in the severance tax on oil and gas production in Colorado. I'd like to address 2, 3, and 4. I'll simultaneously address some of the arguments underlying 2 and 3. We certainly spoke about this during the initial title setting, but I will make my my comments here. Here what we have are two, well, I would argue 3 specific ways in which the revenue is used. One, it's sent to some of the existing general funds, general local and general state funds. Secondly, it's sent to this Land Conservation Trust, the new one, and the Clean Energy Fund. Specifically, the concern is here that the clean energy and the land conservation are two separate subjects that certainly separate from one another at a minimum, but also separate from the severance tax. And at the initial title setting, Ms. Eubanks, on behalf of the title board, queried me about earlier the proposed ballot initiative number 14. And I'd like to address some of those queries directly on point. First of all, number 14 was affirmed by the Colorado Supreme Court as summary affirmance. Under the Colorado Supreme Court's guidance, that does not serve as precedent. In fact, they specifically said that approximately 2 years ago in the English-only case. That was proposed ballot initiative number 55, 2005 to 2006. That was a case in which the prior cycle, a nearly identical ballot title had been ballot proposal and title had been submitted before. The court had summarily affirmed it. It said that because that was not a reported decision, it cannot serve as precedential value. And in fact, that court went on to talk about how it could not even serve as claim or issue preclusion. And the reason why is because the fundamental purposes of this proceeding versus a court proceeding were different, and that this proceeding always allowed for specific types of objections based on the specific instances of the title, and it didn't cut that off. So for these same reasons, I'd say number 14 is not precedential value. Now, I'll nonetheless address some of the merits of that. In that particular instance, the funds went to general funds, I would argue, as well as educational costs. And what the board did in that instance, I've sort of gone through the briefs, and in their opening brief, the board itself specifically said that there was a strong link between the imposition of the tax and the appropriation and distribution of the revenues for school construction and for counties and municipalities, and that was based upon the impact that it had on local communities. So the title board in its arguments before the court based its argument specifically on the impact to the community, and that being the link preserving the single subject matter. And I would, to the extent the, I'm sure the board doesn't have that particular brief in front of them, but it was on page 6 of the opening brief. And it also, later, the title board in their response brief said the revenues were relevant to the impact of extraction in oil and gas. Here we have a different situation. In this particular situation, we have the Land Conservation Fund as well as the Clean Energy State Fund. And the Clean Energy State Fund and the Land Conservation Fund themselves are two separate subject matters and cannot be linked by a generalized impact upon local communities. Certainly the Clean Energy Fund, which goes to state coffers for projects that may or may not be involved based on the may or may not fund projects based on the impact to a local community and don't really have that requirement that they be focused on the impact to a local community at all. That is different, and it is substantially different than the funding for the Land Conservation Fund. So those two purposes in and of themselves are separate, as well as being slightly different from the severance tax as well. So in this instance, we don't have a situation where the tax and then we have a generalized and a specific fund linked by specific impact, but we have a tax, generalized funds, a clean energy fund, and a land conservation fund. So even if one argues that the land conservation fund is specifically focused and connected to the severance tax due to the impact on communities, that argument does not fly with respect to the clean energy fund. And secondarily, the clean energy fund and the land conservation fund are different entities with different purposes that are not connected by a single subject. And that brings me back to my earlier argument that I had made the other week, which was that one cannot simply take a tax and then distribute it to a variety of funds or a variety of purposes and simply say because you received tax and now you're spending it, that they're all automatically connected by the same subject. So this is a particular instance where they are not connected by the same subject, and we argue that they are two separate subjects. And then also, you know, going back to the purposes of the single subject requirement is to prevent log rolling. Here what you have when you divert funds or allocate funds to separate, distinct subject matters is what you're doing is you're actually obtaining support from different constituencies that may or may not, that are not related to one another, not necessarily related to one another. So people may believe in this thing called the Clean Energy Fund, but not really be worried so much about land conservation. And they'll support the measure, whereas people who support are more focused on the Land Conservation Fund, and that's their interest, will support the measure as well, even though the funds are going for disparate purposes, disparate impacts, and have different subjects along those lines. So for that reason, items 2 and 3 are show that there are separate subjects here. With respect to item number 4, this is a little bit different. Towards the very end of the measure, it basically says that the new Land Conservation Fund will be housed at essentially a GOCO, and that the normal prohibitions and restrictions on GOCO do not apply to their administration of this particular fund. That is a different subject because what it's now doing is rejiggering what GOCO can and can't do. Granted, it may be for this limited purposes, but it is still changing the fund, changing the nature of GOCO, changing their authority, changing the limitations upon a GOCO. So as a result, that certainly is another subject that's hidden within the folds of this particular measure. I did not bring this issue to the board's attention last week, but I'm doing it on behalf of Mr. Dempsey today. So those are the four separate subjects we have, and the arguments I have that this does not meet the single subject requirement, and that in fact there are different subjects based on the disparate and different spending priorities, as well as the fact that the GOCO provision, this essentially changes in a very obtuse and almost hidden way what GOCO may and may not do as far as its overall powers, and that certainly itself is a change in the GOCO's powers that is not dependent upon this and is upon the severance tax and is a separate subject. I'm happy to address any questions, or if the board would prefer, I can move on to the issues with respect to the title.
Let me just, I'm just trying to digest your last point just a little better and compare it to the text. So let me see how close I am to understanding. We've got Section 5 of the measure creating the Land Conservation Fund. Is subsection 2 of that of the new section says it's not subject to the limitations and restrictions of the GOCO Trust Fund, et cetera. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, I am. And then there's a conforming measure under 3360107. And I think, if I'm correct, and I'm certainly willing to be disabused if I'm incorrect, that change was based on a response to a question by Legislative Legal Services, because Legislative Legal Services flagged the fact that this was something new and different, that it changed the existing laws for GOCO, and accordingly suggested that the proponents create a conforming measure to clarify that it's changing GOCO's powers. So that was actually in response to something that Legislative Legal Services identified, and that's why that conforming amendment was added in the final draft.
So the new fund is not subject to the limitations and restrictions applicable to the trust fund, but it's the new fund is still administered by the Great Outdoors, by the state board. I'm just trying to absorb, you know, how much of a change is this really? How significant is this? It strikes me as fairly minor, but maybe I'm not fully appreciating. I mean, in creating a new fund, what's it taking away from what the board does now? Is that this thrust of your argument, that this is a surprise, the impact to the trust fund and the board, the GOCO board? Is there something surreptitious or?
Well, I am arguing that the existing limitations on the trust fund, which are outlined in the Constitution, don't apply to this particular, or to the board, don't apply to this new fund that exists. And I have not reviewed all the case law outlining those parameters. But this was certainly included for a purpose, and that purpose was to change what GOCO can do at the moment. And I'd argue whether one believes it's a minor change or a major change, it's nonetheless a change that, in fact, is a different subject. And I would argue that the definition of single subject really doesn't have the standard for a single subject doesn't have sort of a de minimis standard, that if it's only a minor second subject, it's not that big of a deal as opposed to a major second subject. And I'd argue here that it's, on its face, a separate subject that discusses GOCO. And clearly the proponents put it in here because they thought it was relevant and important enough to make those changes to GOCO. So I'm relying actually on the proponents' desire to make that change.
Domenico?
Well, the measure, as I read it, doesn't change GOCO's responsibilities or the limitations on what it can do with respect to anything current. It's only if this measure passes they get this new fund, and when they're administering the new fund, they can do it without those limits, right? Is that right?
I believe that's correct, yes.
So, I would certainly agree with you if this measure contained something that said, in addition to what it does, eliminated GOCO's limits for everything it does. But it seems to me that this measure could have just created a new body to administer this fund, right, and not subjected it to the GOCO limits. And that wouldn't really, to me, be a single subject violation just because they had to house this fund. Some entities had to have the authority to run it. And so, to me, the fact that they've basically just attached it to an existing body but not at the same time extended that existing body's limitations on other things to this, that's the only difference from that situation, and I don't see that really as a single subject violation. I mean, it doesn't change what GOCO can do with respect to anything it currently can do. It just gives it a new responsibility, and that new responsibility, it's got different limitations. Am I wrong about that?
Well, we would disagree with your characterization that it doesn't violate single subject.
Right.
But, you know, as I said earlier, it does seem to change it with the future revenue stream. The argument, I think, still remains that it's a change in GOCO's responsibilities and what they can and can't do.
But say
that is a separate subject.
Say the measure was silent about who's in charge of this fund. Someone would have to run it, right?
That's correct.
And that someone would not be subject to GOCO's limitations, right?
Not necessarily. I mean, in that instance, I think there'd have to be enabling legislation.
Yeah, somebody would have to figure it out, right?
Which would be a second, a new bill, or I guess it could be an initiative, but a new bill that would have that subject as well, and that would have its own specific subject.
But if in this they had said it'll be administered by the newly created trust fund board, and it shall not be subject to the GOCO limits, that doesn't change. That's not a new subject, is it? It's just there's something about your argument that I agree with, which is that if it really did change GOCO's responsibilities, current responsibilities, then that would be one thing. It doesn't do that. It adds a new revenue stream, as you say, that they can administer in a different way, but that's pretty clearly tied to the creation of the new revenue stream, and you don't want these certain revenues be subject to those limits. I don't see how that's a second subject. But I understand your argument, I think. I'm just not quite there.
Ms. Eubanks?
If I could continue along this line a little bit, just a little bit different tact. Is your argument, because it's involving GOCO and it's a constitutionally created entity and it has constitutionally created restrictions on the what it can do with the trust fund versus the GOCO trust fund versus this trust fund, or would you make your same argument contrary to how Mr. Domenico suggested in terms of the measure creating a new entity? What if it took, I don't know, had it this fund created by, I don't know, the executive director of one of the principal departments, an existing? I mean, would you still make the argument that having the executive director of a department administer this fund constitutes a second subject because it's changing the responsibilities of that executive director? Or is this because it's GOCO and it's constitutional?
Let me try and answer that. Obviously, it would depend on the language before us, in sort of a hypothetical case, before I would firmly commit one way or the other. But I would argue that if this simply said, okay, this new revenue stream, and assuming other single subject matters are adequately addressed, that it shall be administered by a particular agency, and it doesn't describe the agency's inherent powers, inherent limitations, procedures, or anything like that. It's that the agency is either free to determine that according to its normal grant of authority, or that it's free to do that based on legislative guidance. I don't think that would create the same problems that we have here. But I think it is analogous to perhaps your initial thought that, you know, GOCO does have sort of constitutionally mandated restrictions on what and how they can do things. And by changing those restrictions, even if it's for what I'm sure the proponents would characterize as a limited purpose, but changing those restrictions does change GOCO itself. And because it's such a broad change on any limitation with respect to these funds, that can conceivably not just what they spend it on, which is inherent in here, but how they spend it as well and what their normal procedures are. So that's the difference in the subject. That's the difference, and that creates the separate subject. So the fact that GOCO is constitutionally mandated, I think, reinforces our argument, but it doesn't necessarily depend upon that.
Thank you.
Did I achieve clarity in my response there? I'm hoping I did. Thank you.
Do you want to go on then to the other
Certainly.
Issues?
As I said, we dropped the very first issue, so I won't address that. The other two issues, with respect to number two, fails to identify the percentages of tax revenues devoted to each new purpose. We obviously had this discussion last week as well, and I am conscious of the fact that I was on the short end of a 3-0 vote. But nonetheless, I would like to make my argument here and reinforce it. I think a good lens through which to view this is perhaps number 68, which we just saw, and this particular issue, number 71. And the percentages are different in how they are allocated. And the difference is, it's a big difference. Obviously, it's expressed in percentages here, but those percentages have meanings. 40% of over 200, of almost $300 million, I'd argue is a lot of money, especially when it's from year to year. And that's critical to understanding how this operates, the impact that it has. Now, the Colorado Constitution, obviously the Tabor Amendment, requires a specific number as far as how much revenue is raised. And I think that goes to the fact that the voters, in looking at tax measures, you know, also indicated that it's important to understand the magnitude of tax increases. That the magnitude is a very critical and important piece of information, as is the how this works or the subject matter that it works on, that the magnitude is. And Tabor requires that the magnitude be expressed in a dollar term. Obviously, I think a dollar term would be appropriate here as well, but I think a percentage term is also appropriate on how money is spent. Spending is the flip side of the coin of the tax. I mean, most tax, and some would argue that even more than most taxes, are spent by governments. And so the amount that's spent or how money is spent, that magnitude, a measure of that magnitude, is critical information to enable voters to make a meaningful choice. And for that reason, I'll continue the argument that failing to include some indication of the magnitude, which is appropriately expressed in percentages here, renders this ballot title incomplete. And just to, again, compare it to number 68, let us assume that one or the other is on the ballot. Unlikely, I guess, as I understand it, that both would be. But some voters may find it a real distinct difference between the fact, and I would argue that many would, that 40% is allocated to one thing versus 20% or 10%. And the reason why is because over several years that, or perhaps even in 1 year, I mean, it's hundreds of millions of dollars. And that's a big difference. And so I would again urge the board here to add the 40% or add the percentages. Obviously, the board has to weigh against that, creating a succinct title. Adding percentages here does not create an unduly cumbersome title here, and it would be appropriate to explain the percentages as to how these, how this money is being spent. Now, obviously, I think, I shouldn't say obviously, but I sense that the board thought the other week that my argument would have been stronger if it were, say, 5%, 5%, 90%. That characterization had or created more, lent more weight to the argument that that the percentages should be included. But I don't think the board should stop at that point, because accuracy is a critical item. And although the board's opinion may be that it only rises to that level when you have some large imbalance here, I think it's important to let voters make that decision for themselves and to have that in the ballot title as to what the appropriate percentages are. So again, I would urge the board to add those percentages. Finally, with respect to the phrase preservation of land and water resources, I know there was some discussion. I did not bring this up before, bringing it up for the first time here. I'd argue that's a catchphrase. It does work to the proposal's favor without really contributing to an understanding of what this does. I guess the voters, I mean, preservation of land and water resources. Land and water resources is pretty much everything. Well, maybe it's not air resources. So if it were to include land, water, and air resources, that would be everything in human existence. But land and water resources is hugely broad. A resource can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. In fact, I'd argue it means anything to anyone. Everyone views everything on land or everything in water to be a resource. A resource is something at their disposal. And when you preserve resources, you keep resources. In other words, you're keeping everything. So it's difficult to see how this could be anything but you know, using the to use synonyms, you know, using the phrase preservation of land and water resources would be, you know, preserving everything that we use almost. Unless, of course, it's an air resource. So I guess my argument isn't entirely complete along those lines. But the point is that this can easily form the slogan, you know, increase taxes to preserve our resources. And preserving resources in that manner, I think, is an improper catchphrase that can be used as a slogan. It truly doesn't, it doesn't add to a lot of voter understanding, again, because resources can be anything. And preservation, maintaining things, seems to be a very positive connotation here. The argument the board earlier had about that it's not dispositive, but it's certainly an element that this board should weigh. So based on that, our argument as well is that the preservation of land and water resources is a proper catchphrase.
Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Gessler? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Veach, would you like to respond, or anyone else? Okay.
If necessary, respond. Otherwise,
I am wondering about and we probably did cover this, but with respect to the request from Mr. Gessler to include the specific percentages, what are the proponents feeling about that?
I think it's typically not done. For example, in 13, the percentages were 75 and 25. That wasn't done there, and I think that's where we headed off. Included at the last meeting, was that 40-40-20 is not so disparate that the citizens need a kind of a red flag for that.
Okay. I mean, I don't have strong feelings about it one way or the other, but I'm inclined to leave it the way it is unless the proponents concur that we should change it, and I'm not hearing that. So,
okay. That's correct.
Any questions for Ms. Veach? Okay, thank you. Is there anybody else who wishes to comment on the motion for rehearing? Seeing none, discussion by the board.
Well, I have to say I tend to agree with some of what Mr. Gessler said, that the idea that you can simply raise a tax or impose a fee and then use it for any number of purposes, no matter what they are, is pushing it. These, I think, are fairly related to one another and to the severance tax, even if it's a little bit tenuous in some ways. So, given our command to be liberal about our interpretation of the single subject, I'm willing to go along, although I do think that some of these are borderline. As to the title, as I think I said last time, I definitely prefer if we put the percentages in here. I think it's a much better title, and it doesn't, I don't see any downside to it. That said, there are lots of ways to write a complete and accurate title, and this is not inaccurate. You know, if in fact the percentages are all that important to voters, as Mr. Gessler argued, they can look at the measure itself and get those percentages. So while I would prefer putting the percentages in, I've voted in favor of the titles this way because I don't think it makes them inaccurate. I do think they'd be better. And then as to the issue of the language for preservation of land and water resources, I know we really struggled with that last time. I don't know that I think it's really a catchphrase. I could be talked into just maybe deleting resources at the end, because that seemed to be part of the main concern. But I don't know that that fixes anything that Mr. Gessler really was complaining about, and I don't know that it makes it any better. So unless someone else is interested in pursuing that, I'm not going to make a motion on that or on the percentages, although, as I say, I think I would put them in there if it were just me. I'd put them in all of them, not just this one, but since we're not doing it, I haven't pushed it.
You know, and I basically agree with your comments, Mr. Domenico. I mean, I think the different recipients of the funds, there is a connection. It's not like we're raising taxes and putting a part for the clean water fund and then another part for transportation or something else. Well, even that, I guess I might be able to argue, but at least they're not totally different items, and there is a relationship, as you said, to the severance tax, and you know, and I think I, although we pretty much discussed this, and Mr. Domenico, I think you convinced me. I just want to note that I do think that, with respect to the issue about the limitation on the GOCO board, I think, as you identified, I think that's not a separate subject. I think the proponents chose to delegate administrative oversight to an existing board, and they simply, I think, just wanted to answer that question what about the existing constitutional provisions that govern the trust fund? And just to avoid some issue about it, I think they said those don't apply. And I think that's not a separate subject. And I agree with you, Mr. Domenico. I don't see that preservation of land and water resources is a catchphrase. So I don't know. That's at this point, I'm not convinced to change what the board did before. Do you have any comments, Ms. Eubanks?
I think in general, I'm in agreement with both of you. I still believe that the measure constitutes a single subject. In terms of the administration of the fund, I think that's well within the purview of the measure to be able to specify those details. The fact that it's the GOCO board versus somebody else, I don't think that makes a difference to me. In terms of the spending mandates and the various purposes for which the revenues are to be used, if you buy that argument, then severance tax is really sort of a form of income tax. I mean, it's based on income received from the sale of oil and gas severed. And so, you just equate it to income tax in general. You could never have an income tax rate increase because you use it for different I don't know that how you sort of equate this. You got to do it for a related purpose for which, in terms of what the tax is imposed on versus what you use it. And the fact that you have some differences in terms of the various purposes for which it's used, I don't know how you make sense of that and apply it in various situations. And so at this point, I still believe that the measure constitutes a single subject. In terms of the percentages, I agree that we could include the percentages. I don't know that not including the percentages is a fatal flaw in the title. I believe it still gives sufficient notice of the purposes for which it's to be spent. I mean, for example, even if you put it percentages, folks may not know what the Clean Energy Fund is used for, or may not know what the local government severance tax fund is used for. And so they'd have to be looking. I mean, you might guess. I mean, for us, it may be easier to surmise the purposes of those funds because we're more familiar with them. But they may have to be looking more specifically to figure out various purposes. And I don't know that adding percentages really helps them know if they agree with those priorities or not in terms of how the funds are spent on various purposes. And in terms of the catchphrase, I think we worked very hard to come up with the terminology that is currently in the title to avoid a catchphrase. I don't know that we could describe it any other way. And so I would deny the motion for rehearing.
Any further discussion? Is there a motion? Eubanks?
I would move to deny the motion for rehearing.
I'll second that. If there's no other discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That concludes action on number 71. The time is 12:25 p.m. That concludes our morning agenda, and we will reconvene at 1.